Welcome to the second episode in the Offstage series with myself and Mr. Cameron Leach. Cameron, I think that was one of our better conversations. That actually is one of the better conversations I've had in the podcast overall. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed that. So,
yeah, that was a lot of fun. After we got past the infections and surgeries, we really got into it there. So,
yeah, you'll see what we're talking about that in that realm. Yeah, you know, I think this offstage thing could be really something special. So for one thing, on behalf of both of us, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for following along. And I hope you enjoyed this as much as we did. For in any case, the offstage series is about kind of hanging out, being offstage in the green room, in the back, on the wings, and just talking about real life stuff, not necessarily just drums. So, and I think this episode, this conversation really embodied that kind of mindset. Anything for the listeners, Cam, before we get into the episode?
No, this is a great one, man. A lot of real stuff there towards the middle and the end of the conversation. So I hope everybody enjoys, and don't take us too seriously if we go down some rabbit holes. You know, we're just exploring some ideas here. So
we're just talking, man. We're vibing. All right. Without further ado, here is the second Offstage with Cameron Leach.
I made some video the other day about whiskey samples on the channel saying like, hey, you know, if you send me samples, I'm happy to take them. I can't guarantee that I'll review them because I have like 150 samples now. And I was like, I can't guarantee I'll get a video out or do it on a live stream. I'm happy to give you my tasting notes for your samples you sent. And some people just want to share. But then I said, I will not be sending any back because some people have been expecting samples back. And I'm like, oh. I'm going to run out of whiskey if you expect samples back, you know? So
yeah.
I put that video up and people are still sending it. So I'm like, all right, fine. You know,
how do you get around shipping alcohol?
Well, let's just talk theoretically.
Right. This is, of course, if like in a world where we're wanting to ship alcohol, I'm just out of curiosity.
If you wanted to ship 2 ounce bottles of essential oils or olive oil in whiskey bottles, the way you would do that for these, you don't use USPS on anything.
Right.
And a lot of people make that mistake. Use FedEx or UPS. It's a little more hazy with the laws of that, you know?
Right.
A little more, and yeah, I mean, some people use noisemakers in the box so you can't hear the glugging. But you gotta, for these samples, I like shrink wrap the tops of them heavy, like really tight, and then I wrap the whole thing up and then bubble wrap it and throw it in a little box. Right. And then these bottles have these like inflatable shippers that you use. They're like $1 a piece and you blow them up and it's beautiful. I mean, all you have to do is like kind of pack some packing paper around it.
Where do you get those from?
So those are like just on Amazon. They're basically for wine bottles. If you buy whiskey or wine and you're going to put it in your suitcase and fly it home, I used to just wrap that.
Oh, I've done that before.
I used to just wrap it in dirty socks and like, you know, your clothes and shit. But no, there's like these inflatable shippers that you use. So
Yeah. The ones I had were like just like bubble wrap lined. They weren't inflatable though. Did I show you this? Hold on. I'll see if I can reach. This is not for me. This is a gift for somebody else that I'm taking to them, but Charbay.
I don't know that.
It's hops infused.
Oh, weird.
Hop flavored whiskey.
Oh, flavored. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I tried it. It's super interesting. 10 barrel run and fifth release of R5.
Huh.
49.5%. 99 proof.
Yeah.
From California.
Okay.
So, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Are you sending it to somebody, or are you handing it off?
Well, I was supposed to send it to somebody. I just didn't know how.
Yeah. Yeah, I can show you my system.
The Pablo Escobar.
It's funny, man. Like, you know, these things are flying all around. But yeah, I've never had any questions asked when I'm sending any of this stuff. You know, the local FedEx would see me come in a bunch, and yeah, you know, people are sending people bottles all the time. It's like,
yeah,
and some people are selling them, you know, illegally, and I don't even think that should be a problem, to be honest with you. Like,
it's not prohibition anymore, fellas.
It's all tax dollars. That's the only reason why it's illegal, is tax dollars. But I don't know, man. But yeah, got some more samples should be coming today. So that's that.
What's been going on? You just been hanging out or what?
Yeah. What day is it? Tuesday. So when's the last time we did one of these? Was it last week? I'm trying to think about what's... Oh, yeah, because we got together on Wednesday, and I did a masterclass that night, which was...
Oh, how'd that go?
It was hilarious. I mean, it was literally just a therapy session. Like the guy said... Yeah,
you mentioned that it was probably going to be like that.
We just like, talked, and it was super low-key, and it was good for me. I didn't have to play or anything. Yeah, man, and then this weekend, I got a call for, like, a bunch of gigs. Like,
really?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. Like, a bunch of orchestra work. I talked to some band directors in Ohio and outside of Ohio about doing stuff with them. Like, it was a very weird weekend with all this work possibly, you know, coming my way. And then, yeah, it's been a good week. Like, this week I started exercising again and kind of getting my shit together. So,
what you been doing? Running?
Insanity. So,
okay.
Video stuff. I used to do that every day when I was in college, in my undergrad, and it was really good for me. And now I wanted to talk about some stuff today, just about discipline, you know. But
yeah, absolutely.
it's been one of these things where I realized, like, I need to set an attainable goal for myself that I can check off, because, like, usually when I go and do. I have a gym membership, and when I go and lift, I just kind of have an outline in my head, but it's like, sometimes I'll say I want to do 3 sets of 8, and then I'm like, I'll just do a 4th set, you know? And so you're always kind of changing it up. And I was like, let me just do Insanity front to back 100% and check it off my list in 60 days and say, like, I did that, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I need to accomplish something tangible right now instead of floating in outer space.
I'm kind of going through that right now with my running.
Uh-huh.
Because I have never been a good runner ever. When I was playing sports, I was more of the short distance kind of, like, and baseball doesn't involve a ton of running except when you're running around the bases. So, or if you're playing outfield, but it's kind of like, distance running for me has always been this, not necessarily a, what do you call it? Not necessarily like a Moby Dick of, like, kind of like a task. But at the same time, I did want to kind of get better at it, because A, it makes you feel pretty good, mm-hmm. especially when you get to a point where you get to a runner's high and all that kind of stuff. But this is always something, one of those athletic feats I've always wanted to do. I have this, like, strange kind of hybrid mindset of, like, I'm an artist, but also I'm like, God, I kind of want to run really fast today. Like, it's just kind of weird. I don't know. But it's, with running, I had to realize how bad I was at it. Cause everybody's just like, well, the key is to not stop. I'm like, okay, but like, I don't know what not stopping feels like, you know, that there's a lot of it that's very unfamiliar, to be honest with you. But then there was like one day where I ran like 4 miles and I was like, what the heck just happened? How did I do that? Uh-huh. And it's all kind of like a, I think running takes a lot of discipline, more so than lifting. I know lifting, you have to get in there and you have to be careful with, you know, weight choices and exercises and stuff like that, and making sure you're building up the right muscles in the right order. But running is a different animal, man. Mm-hmm. It is definitely winning in my life. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I have a harder time getting into the gym and sticking to a weightlifting thing, but I feel like it, for me, it's just an access thing, like driving to the gym, you know, you have to set the time aside. Whereas running, you could just kind of pick up and go outside for me. And it's like, okay, I can go run now. My biggest issue with running, every time I try to get back into it, I have really bad shin splints. And that has always been a thing for me from high school when I played lacrosse. So I decided, like, what I'll usually do is I'll go out, I'll do a couple runs, I'll start getting in the gym. My shin splints get so bad that I like can hardly walk. And yeah. And then I'm like, oh crap, so I'll stop running and let me just start doing, like, for instance, Insanity. But I start that by the time that my legs are just chewed up and a mess. So I decided this time, let's start with Insanity. Maybe I'll try to get back into running later, but, you know, I don't know. And running for me is not a tangible goal. It's not like I just keep running until I'm like, okay, it's been a couple miles, 4 miles. I'm going to stop now. I'm tired, you know. As
lacrosse is a lot of running, though.
Yeah.
You're probably used to it.
I was always athletic. The one thing that's been good for me is when I get back into being active, I go through phases. It comes back very quickly. Mm-hmm. Like within a week, I can go out and run 4 to 6 miles, you know. But I don't know. That I haven't stuck with it in a long time. So ever since I was at Eastman, I was doing 2-a-day workouts there.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was like,
wow.
Never in my life have I been ripped, except for basically my first semester at Eastman, coming off of the summer.
Damn, I went the complete opposite way.
Like, I was like in really good shape, and then I got a hernia, and after that surgery, wow, it jacked me up, and I was like just so scared of lifting again.
Yeah,
you know, my hernia was above my belly button, and that surgery going in there, I've had a lot of surgeries and a lot of medical issues, and I've never had a surgery that put me out like that for some reason. So I don't know, man.
Wait, did that hurt? I've never had one. Did it hurt like really bad, or was it just like,
it was just,
oh wait,
poking out? Like my intestine was just poking out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I could feel it, and it was this weird pain that would kind of come and go at different times, but like when it was there, it was hurting, you know. And you're always running that risk of just continuing to tear it more and more, and more intestines starting to come out. So I was like, I should just go get this fixed. And I can't imagine how bad it would hurt if it would have been worse, you know?
Yeah, I know guys that have, it's all from lifting. It's all from like deadlifts and like doing something, like activating that area. And everybody's like, dude, it was brutal.
Yeah, a lot of people get that hernia down in there, their nether regions, you know, and I was glad I didn't have that, and mine was up here. But dude, it had to be from like, I think I probably started it over that previous summer, because I was doing these things like these on these declines where I was doing these sit-ups, you know, you put your legs in the thing and you're doing sit-ups from like a decline position.
You go all the way back.
But I would strap like 2 plates to my chest and just do that. Like I had
2 plates.
Like I was doing a lot of crazy stuff that summer, and then I started doing a lot of squats, a lot of deadlifts, and I could just feel it starting to go. It's like, oh
yeah.
So I put it off as long as I could, and then it was like, I got to get this surgery, man. And
man, I've only been put under once, and that was for a thumb surgery.
That's interesting.
Yeah, thumb surgery. I'd severed the top tendon. Yeah, oof. My hand went through a window.
That just...
I never thought I was going to play again, dude. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
Like, that... I was, like, 18. I was about to go to my undergrad. So, my undergrad started out pretty slow.
Yeah.
Because of that. And, yeah, dude. I got a gnarly scar, too. But that's the only time I've been put under. I have never had my wisdom teeth taken out. They came in straight, like,
nice.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So
you're lucky.
I guess. And then I have this underlying feeling. Somebody tell me if anybody else feels this way. I have this underlying feeling that one day it's all going to come crashing down. It's going to be like left and right. Like, your time is now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait.
It comes in phases. It's like there are times in my life where I'm good, and then there'll be like a few month period where I'm at the doctor every other week, you know, just like something's wrong. Like the wisdom teeth, both sides got infected after the surgery. And then, dude, they would abscess once every couple of days when I was in my senior year of high school. They would abscess, my cheeks would fill up, and then it would explode in my mouth, and I would have to drain my mouth out into a trash can. I mean, some gnarly shit. It was heavy.
Jesus Christ, dude.
So they had to go back in. I know, they had to go back in and like dig out all the infection basically from those sockets. Oh, I'm telling you, like,
Christ,
that was bad, you know. That was maybe one of the worst, like, yeah, it makes you sick to your stomach. You're like, where did all this come from? Like, your mouth keeps filling up. You're like, I don't know how, and you're just, like, standing over a trash can. I would just squeeze my cheeks, and it would just shoot out of my mouth.
What the hell, dude? Oh, my God. I'm never getting my wisdom teeth taken out. Never.
Yeah, I messed that one up, apparently.
Dude, what did you do? Because, like,
I think I just, like, I ate a couple of solid foods maybe a little too early, and like, little itty-bitty things got down in there, and that's all it takes, you know?
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah. That's horrific.
It was.
Of course, that's, yeah. I mean, I've heard of horror stories like that. I mean, my brother, when he was a kid, had to have excess gum removed, and the anesthesia had a reverse effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually made him more alert and more awake. And so, dude, he's like 6 years old. He felt every bit of that laser cut. And like, that was a horrific sound, hearing him just, and like, he's like a little 6 year old kid. And he's like, yeah, dude, anesthesia doesn't work on you. Sorry. Like an evil villain. So yeah, he's a little traumatized from that, I think. But
there's a thing when you go into surgeries. So, and I don't want to get into the weeds. This could be a whole story. Maybe one day I'll tell on one of these episodes. But anyways, I don't like to feel out of my mind, really. Like, for instance, like marijuana, you know. Like, I just, it's never been my thing.
Neither me, actually. It's never did anything for me.
Yeah. Like, I did it a few times when I was younger. When I was really young, you know, like in high school, like 15, 16 years old. And then I had an experience that happened again, and that's where kind of it goes off the rails, and that could be a whole other story. But it's actually kind of interesting with psychological issues and mental health type stuff. But then moving forward, I never like to feel out of my mind. Now, drinking is a different thing. It took me a long time to be able to, like, drink and get drunk, basically, after all this happened. But because of like just anxiety about it and stuff like this, but that's fine now. But like, still, like, marijuana is not for me. But when you go in and you go to have a surgery, they give you like some loopy medicine up front before they knock you out.
Yeah.
And you're kind of in the bed like, oh, you know, acting like an idiot, and then they bring you into the room and you kind of don't really remember that whole scene. Mm-hmm. And I told them, like, I don't want any of that. Like, please don't give me that. Like, whenever I do surgeries now, I just tell them, like, I want to see everything. I want to be completely aware until the lights go out. And so, like, there was this crazy moment during that hernia surgery where I was, like, in the room. They're wheeling me into the OR. And then there's, like, eight people. They all put their hands under you and transfer you into a different bed onto the table.
I actually remember this.
And, like, being fully aware and having just all these hands on you, it was like a scary movie, you know? And then you're like kind of laying there, and it was kind of funny, but kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to be very lucid. And then, you know, they're like cracking jokes at you because they know that you're still very coherent. So I'm like talking to them, cracking jokes. And then it's just like, you know, the lights go out. But very interesting to kind of see that. Because I think in my previous surgeries, I had gotten the loopy meds beforehand.
Yeah. I remember that sequence. I remember them laying my hand on the operating table, mm-hmm. but then shortly after, well, I remember being wheeled down there. I remember being transferred to the table, and I was fully aware, and then having my hand put on the operating table, and then I was out.
Yeah.
So it was, I wasn't as coherent in the fact of like being like, I'm about to get operated on, like, what the hell? But, I definitely remember everything about that. I felt the coldness of the operating table or tray or whatever it was, because it's a hand surgery, and I was like, whoa, and then yeah. done. Like,
there's like a sense weird. Of impending doom for me, yes. when you're going to get a surgery. It's just like there's that small chance that you're just not going to wake up. You know,
yeah,
no matter what it is,
the IV getting put in you and stuff, and you're like, God, I feel like I'm sick, but I'm not. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's very strange. There's probably so many other things wrong with me from kid, like being a kid and getting hurt and stuff like that, that I truthfully do not want to deal with surgically. Uh-huh. I'm fairly certain I have like something torn in my shoulder.
Yeah.
From an injury as a kid, I think it was skateboarding, and I'm afraid to go get it looked at because I'm like, they're like, yeah, we need to rebuild the whole thing. Like, and I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah,
that impending doom feeling is something I absolutely hate.
Yeah,
I can't stand it. And that's the one thing too that I'm with you on, the getting high stuff. Like I got friends that use it for way more, you know, probably more useful reasons, actually, like anxiety, like it helps their anxiety or stomach issues or whatever, allows them to eat, pain management. It's just never done anything for me. It was legal in Nevada. It's starting to become legal here in Texas, which is very surprising. I've done CBD stuff, but that's just to chill out. Like that was only one time, and all I did was just sleep. So
yeah, I love.
Yeah, it took me forever to get drunk too, man. Like there's different kinds of drunk too. Like that wine drunk to me is a little bit more calming, if that's for lack of a better term. I like wine a lot, and when I have a lot of it, I don't feel like heavy. You know, it's a different kind of experience for me.
That's interesting. Whiskey for me kind of gets me going, but I think a lot of it is just the mental associations you have with things, like the typical tasks you're doing while you're consuming certain things, and that's what a lot of, like, you know, like Hamilton Morris. I don't know if you know Hamilton Morris, the guy from Vice, and what's like Pharmacopoeia. He had like a TV show, and he talks about that stuff a little bit, where a lot of it is just kind of how you use certain substances or whatever. But like in the case of alcohol, it's like, I know, like, usually if I'm drinking whiskey, like mentally I'm on, because I'm like thinking about the whiskey. I might be talking about it on camera or something like that. It's like whiskey kind of keeps, there's like a lightness to it for me. And also you have to consume much less, which I like. You know, like if I'm going to drink beer, I feel heavy. I feel bloated and full.
Ugh.
And then you feel like sort of just lazy, you know, and wine just makes me tired for whatever reason. Like I'll just drink some wine and I sit back and I just get sleepy. So, I don't know. It is interesting, but
all alcohol makes me tired.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my adverse reaction to it, I guess. I have no idea why. I've never been like an energetic drunk, like the few times that I have been, and it's like, I don't know what that is. It makes me all tired. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we better start, you know, like slow, because I'm just gonna get more and more sleepy at this engagement. So
it's funny. I don't really party anymore. I mean, who parties in COVID? But even before that, like, I did my fair share of crazy stuff in undergrad, you know, for sure. But at grad school, I mean, a couple of times that I was like really like messed up, you know, But that was like really kind of rare. And now in real life, it's in real life. It's like, I don't, when am I ever going to go to a party? And like, when do I want to throw back shots and feel like shit for 2 days later? Like, no, I'm good.
For one thing, in grad school for me, drinking was too expensive in Vegas.
Oh.
So in Vegas, it was like, sometimes you're paying $12, $13 for a pint of beer.
Oh my God.
That's Vegas though, man. And, yeah. And like, look, the best places to go to do that kind of stuff is on the strip or just off the strip.
Yeah.
So every once in a while you'll find a deal. I mean, jeez. It's not the best anything, but you do pay for experiences too. I guess you could argue that. Like for me personally, if I'm going to an Astros game, like a baseball game, I don't honestly mind paying the prices there because it's all about the experience mm-hmm. and whatever. But it's a little different when like the place you live is an attraction.
Yeah.
That was the strangest part about Vegas. It was like an adult playground. Like this whole city in itself, besides the suburban areas, obviously, even so, it is a giant tourist attraction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so... by far the strangest city I've ever been in. I think I've mentioned that before, but like that was the most frustrating part, honestly, because I'm a sports fan. If I wanted to go to a Knights game, which is now one of the only two professional sports teams there, Knights game to go sit in nosebleeds is like $95 a ticket to sit in nosebleeds.
Yeah.
And then I was like a once or twice maybe occasion. So.
Jeez.
Brutal. Yeah. But I don't know what – so Columbus has Ohio State, right?
Got Ohio State. We got Columbus Crew, soccer.
Ah, soccer.
And the Blue Jackets for hockey. So
– I forgot about that.
And I like – I mean, I like both going to soccer games and hockey games. Those are fun. I like the high pace stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep. Columbus Crew. Yeah, yellow and black.
Yeah, and they're building a new stadium, too. And there was all this drama about the Crew was going to move to Austin. The owners were trying to take them to Austin.
Yeah, instead they just made a new team there.
Yeah. So, because, man, there was a lot of backlash in town, as you can imagine, trying to take the sports team away. One of the only ones.
The Ohio State stuff's crazy, man. That is such a powerhouse.
Yeah.
It's unreal. The what did you want to talk – you said discipline. What were you wanting to get into? Because I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of starting to work out again, and you know, I did the whole keto thing a couple of months ago. I did like basically 10 weeks of keto, and I lost like 15 pounds total by the end, which was
no
great.
No carbs, right?
Right. Mm. Yeah, very little, like 20, 30 grams a day of net carbs. And we did that, and that was very interesting. I've never done a diet like that before, but starting to work out again and thinking to myself, like, how am I going to stick through this and what is going to keep me on the wagon? And I felt like the reason I chose to do like this series of workout videos and do Insanity was because, yeah, I needed to have a tangible goal at some point and develop the habit first so that then I can say to myself, like, I'll go to the gym and, you know, today I'll do chest and triceps and he, you know, maybe I'll switch it up at the gym as I'm feeling a certain way and have that freedom and that creativity to do what, you know, do what you feel like your body needs in the moment as opposed to sticking to a regimen. But for now, I need to just set myself up to have a disciplined goal because I felt like, and, you know, we both listen to a lot of the same podcasts and stuff like this. I find myself, I'm like undiagnosed ADHD as much as you can get, probably.
Bruh.
You know, like I can't finish tasks. Like, I mean, my desk behind me, you can see all the sticky notes like on my desk. Like I have to write shit down or in the notes of my phone the minute that I get the idea or it's gone. And I feel like a lot of people are this way, but I was talking to my fiance, Sarah, and she's like, oh, yeah, of course you have ADHD. Come on. You know, and I'm like, damn it.
Without a skip of a beat, man.
Yeah. Like. And so I started to think about it, like, what has kept me on track throughout the 6 years of school and the 2 years out of school, and now I'm in my the ninth year of that set of years, I guess, was like the idea that I had so many ideas and I don't mind working my ass off and like just taking like personal mental health and just putting it to the side and just working. I'm good at that. And I had all these ideas. So it was easy to get things happening and to do things, but to actually sit down and go task by task and accomplish something was very foreign to me, you know? So Sarah has been on my ass for a long time to start making schedules because I despise them because of this. Like, I like to just float around.
Man, this is just further supporting the true fact that we are the same person, because everything you just said is what I struggle. I find it to be easier for me to start something. I usually finish it, but it's the problem is that it takes me way too long to finish it. Mm-hmm. Like, way too long for my, I guess, liking. It's hard to explain, but I know for a fact that I do wish that I could finish something in a little bit more ample time frame. It's one of those things of like solely focusing on something for me is such, it's like trying to find the eighth world wonder. It's so incredibly hard for me to just like focus on one thing for a certain amount of time. So I actually had to build schedules because in grad school for practice and everything, it made me a better practicer.
Yeah.
It may be better at practicing because of the efficiency fact or whatever. But my teacher, Dean, he would write out checkboxes like, because he was the same way and had to like balance doing law and doing UNLV and everything else he had going on in his life. So I took that into account with grad school. But for me, doing it for real life when I don't, let's be honest, like you don't have nearly as much going on as you did in grad school because everything is just happening at once. So I look at that checklist and I'm like, oh, I actually don't have as much to do today as I thought. So that's one thing that helps me with it. But I honestly can't stand them in outside of school either for whatever reason. I have no idea. It's very hard to adjust to this life, especially when you go straight through 2 degrees. I don't know if you found that as well.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that is hard. I mean, I think in school, because you're drowning in stuff to do, it's really easy, no matter which way you turn and what task you start doing at any given time, like you're making progress, so you're fine. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I have 6 papers, this many pieces, no matter what I choose in this moment, it's the right answer. And
right. It's chipping away.
Yeah. And in like real life, I do have things I need to get done, but yeah, there are, you know, I have hours a day where I can sit and daydream about like, and plan and think creatively about what I'm going to do. And those are the times that you can just screw off, you know, or
yeah, exactly.
Or whatever. And so I, you know, I'm like printing out the insanity calendar, something I would never do, and checking the days off. Because I need to see that physically, that it's going away, that I'm chipping away at this. And so what I've been doing is every day I'm waking up a little bit earlier. And today I got my ass out of bed at like, I think 7:40, which is good. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I do is go down and work out. And I've decided that I want to get outside more. Like, this has been a big goal of mine. And now the weather's getting nicer. So as soon as I get done working out, I go out and walk 5,000 steps. You know, and like
about how far is that?
Almost 2 miles, maybe. So it's not a lot, but like right after the workout, it's a great way for me to cool down because I don't like to jump in the shower after a workout immediately. I hate getting out of the shower sweating still.
yeah.
You know,
that's counterproductive.
That's not great. But so I'll go out and walk and turn on a podcast and just be on the notes of my phone and just be planning things. And then get home, jump in the shower, make some food, and start my day. So I've been telling myself, if I just get those two things done, I've accomplished what I need for the day now. And
there's this like underlying rule that I guess some people have said about like getting all those things done before 10 a.m. is maybe a good.
Oh, that's
a good.
See, that's my goal time. That's interesting.
Okay. Because
if I start working at 10 a.m., I feel like I'm not losing out on my day. Because I mean, that gives me 6 great hours to work, 1 hour to take some time to myself to eat, and then it's 5 o'clock. And if you want to go till 5 o'clock, I mean, you can get a lot of shit done in 6 hours, you know, if you really work.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, man, I've just been thinking about that. And then what all I've been also thinking in that meta way of like, okay, so I'm trying to get more disciplined now, but it requires discipline to become disciplined. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so like thinking on that extra layer of removing yourself two levels and looking at the discipline that you are enacting to get disciplined and trying to have control over all of those things. That's, I've been thinking a lot about that.
What is that? A double entendre?
No, I think that's like, I don't know what you would call this, honestly.
But I understand exactly, like, I'm over analytical in general, but like thinking about what, because we mentioned these guys last week, Goggins and Haynes and all, like they are disciplined in multiple facets.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're disciplined in just in the fact that they get up at the same, Jocko Willink gets up at 4:30 every morning.
Yeah.
Post a picture of it on his Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
And there's so many different sides of the argument. You have maybe not so many different in that sense, but there's one side of the argument that's like, I don't need to get up early to get what I need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other side of like, no, get up early because it's all mental at this point. You're allowing yourself to find excuses to not get as much done and be as productive. Early bird gets the worm, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think I lean more towards the get up early thing. And this is why. There's something about the morning time when there's not as much going on, the world hasn't started yet,
mm-hmm.
that allows you to focus a little bit more, I think. For a little bit during quarantine, I was getting up at 5 a.m. and going on a run. And it felt strange to already be done with a workout by 6 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very strange. But it felt like I felt good throughout the day, and I felt like I had so much more time to get stuff done. There's something about this like 8/9 p.m. feeling in my world where it feels like I don't feel as productive or motivated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter what time I got up. So there's like, I think I'm more in the sense of like get up early to get more done. The 10 a.m. rule, like we were just talking about, which I've seen more and more of. The universe kind of works weird in that way, where like you talk about something and all of a sudden you hear mm-hmm. always hear about it and see it and think about it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I go to two different things in the morning. It's either I do my workout immediately, and then. Like now I'm basically trying to like work out physically, and then sort of my morning walk is for me to get right mentally for the day, you know, like that's kind of the way I'm thinking about it. And then I'm prepping myself in both aspects. And then by 10 a.m. I'm hitting it. But at the same time, the morning, like you're saying, when there's no distractions in the world, because what happens if you leave your work till 10 a.m. is then by the time you start working, the emails are coming in, people need your attention. Mm. And so you are going to get pulled away. And that's another thing where I'm going to start being more disciplined about not checking my email except for certain periods of the day. You know, I'm going to schedule that in because it'll just steal your time. But at the same time, like you're saying, there's nothing going on in the morning. And I love being able to get up and let's say I need to like cut some videos that require a little creative energy or even, I mean, shit, practice. I love early morning creative work. I love
early morning practice, dude.
It's great, but then you're like, I don't want to. Love it. Then I get to like noon, and I'm like, do I want to work out right now? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, cause I love the physical feeling of like getting the workout done in the morning, and I don't like eating before I work out because I cramp up really bad. Mm-hmm. So the morning's great, but so I'm like in two camps where I don't know if I want to screw with my schedule and try like every other day. You know, this day is a morning workout. This day's afternoon. I don't know, because I love that creative time in the mornings too.
I like an evening run. I will say that.
Yeah, I do too.
An evening run around 6 p.m., 7 p.m., especially with the time change here and everything. Like, it's an awesome time to run with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But well, one question I had about your walk is that you said you had a podcast on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you do that creative thinking, that mental reset. Is that not more taxing to just do it without the than doing it without the podcast? Because there's an author, Ryan Holiday. He wrote he runs the Daily Stoic, which is just kind of like a newsletter community thing. And he wrote a couple books. He called a book called Ego is the Enemy, and a couple others. But he was talking about how it's just music during that workout and slash walk run time because he wants to turn his brain off for a second. Maybe that's just the workout thing, but the morning, that doesn't get in the way. Like a podcast doesn't get in the way of your mental, I guess, capacity or.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, only on day two right now, because here's the deal. I've never ever, I've worked out a lot in my life, but I've never ever made time to like walk.
Yeah.
And part of it for me is like, even if I'm just trying to get used to that, because if I go on the road or I go do certain things, like just making it a practice for my own health, like get the sun in my face, but also my own health of just getting out and taking steps instead of just sitting on my ass in a hotel room or something, just making it a priority that like, if I will just go walk, and making that more regular for me. But yesterday I did it where I had music on during my walk because I had a lot of planning to do. So like, I mean, I was like trying to plan the week more or less. And then today, because I've kind of did that pre-work, I left a podcast on during the walk because I only had a couple things on my phone to go over and really think about. But like, I was able to be more engaged with the podcast because I didn't have as much planning to do. So I think like, it'll depend on my mood which one I choose. But yeah, that's a good piece of awareness too, is like, sometimes a podcast, I get pissed. Like I'll leave it on in my ears thinking I can work, and I'll start working, and after 35 minutes, I find myself being angry, and it's because I can't focus. I'm like, oh, get these things out of my ears, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I throw them down. It's like, you know, so.
I mean, I can't really work out with a podcast.
I can run with a podcast. I can run on a treadmill at the gym. But like when I'm outdoors, I want to be listening to something that's going to keep, you know, keep me going. But sometimes also outdoors, it's nice to just listen to the birds. I used to go through phases where I would just, no music, I'd go run for 6 miles, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a interesting point, because I feel like there is a sense of cloudiness that I've been having lately. And I think it's because I've been a little, this is about to get real for a second, a little down because of everything that's going on professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything, my job is falling apart because of administrative choices, involving cutting programs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, this is the first time I felt like I have no direction, like a chosen path, where before the pandemic hit, I had a pretty chosen path. Like I was going to, you know, stay in Vegas and play and get in with the right circles and get better and practice and get my own space. Pandemic hits, I wind up back in Texas, by my choice, and everything that was going on here. And what I've been doing lately to deal with everything that's been going on is I've just been having more screen time and more podcasts and listening to podcasts that really aren't about anything. They're just comedy podcasts.
Yeah.
And they're not talking about anything. They're just trying to make you laugh. And so I feel this sense of cloudiness, and that cloudiness mentally leads to being lethargic and not getting as much done. And it really weighs on you. And it has a lot to do with like, well, I'm seeing all these other people have a good time with their careers and getting a lot of creative projects done, and I'm in making money, consistent money, which, look, if you don't have consistent money coming in, that's a mental battle in itself.
Yeah.
Right. Especially at this point in the career where you're having to purchase gear and stuff that is useful towards what you want to do. And So all of that weighing down has caused me to actually be on my phone more, which is one of my New Year goals was to be on my phone less.
Yeah.
And I was doing well at first, and then everything started happening. You're like, dang it, dude. Like, now I'm up on the screen time. So it makes me feel very cloudy. And so I might take a break from podcasts for a bit and listen to more music, because listening is something that was kind of not ruined, but it definitely changed for the both of us going through two music degrees, right? Mm-hmm. You're listening analytically, maybe even critically, and having to get back to that old enjoyment, right, is something I've been trying to focus on. So we'll see. That cloudiness definitely has been weighing on me, though. Just not thinking extremely clearly, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So. I feel like I went through that phase too in the pandemic, where I just found myself like doing nothing and just listening to podcasts, because there's so much out there.
Yeah.
And just like my guilty pleasure for podcasts was listening to Theo Von, because I think he's hilarious.
Yeah. And I just listened to him yesterday, actually.
So. You know, and at least like when you listen to Joe Rogan, you know, with certain people on there, you really feel like you're learning a lot of stuff. You're engaged. And, you know, some of the other guys, you're just doing it for fun. And I found myself doing so much of that. And I don't really know. I mean, I'm trying to think of kind of how I got out of it. You know, I mean, the Drums and Drams thing helped me a lot, where I started, for instance, I started watching less podcasts. Okay, let me rewind again. I'm all over the place. In 2019, I was listening to a shitload of podcasts. But I was also like on the road and doing everything. And so not a good time to be like, you know, putting your time into listening to that. And then I decided, let me make my own podcast because of that. And then like more recently, it was like last year I started watching so much Whiskey Tube stuff. And then I was like, why am I watching all this? Why not make my own?
Right.
And so that's always been kind of the progression. But then I did find myself, before Drums and Drams came along, just listening to so many podcasts. And I think the two ways that I feel like approaching that is either one, like sit your ass down and create a plan, or two, just start doing whatever and not listening. Like, it's either like throw shit against the wall and see what sticks, or plan out your next move.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
I was thinking about doing this modern snare drum competition, but I don't think I have enough time, because I didn't realize it was next month. I just was told about it last week. So, and that's a lot of lit.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's like three pieces the first round, two the next round, and then two the final round, if you make it that far. But you got to learn everything, because you can't just go week to week. But I actually might still just take that lit and just start learning it for fun, just to get back into the swing of things, right? Because all the music I've been playing here hasn't been anything classical. It's been pop or, you know, acoustic sets, pop percussion stuff, drum set. But, you know, actually the other day I saw that Pearl is dropping all these new drums, like just insane lineup of stuff that they're dropping this year. And they usually are the kind of company that doesn't do that. Like, they kind of don't give into that whole, we got to release new products, what we have is good. But dude, they're redoing the entire Philharmonic line. They're releasing vintage drums for the first time, like vintage style drums. Mm-hmm. And so that's honestly, gear does kind of motivate you in a little bit of, especially if you haven't been around that kind of stuff in a while, like and one of my favorite things in the entire world is concert snare drum. It really is. I love it. Love playing it. Love playing solos in orchestral setting, whatever. So I might get back into that, maybe as kind of like a stepping stone. So
what, I mean, do you have any shows on the horizon or any gigs or anything like that you need to prep for? Like, what is your, do you have ideas for next moves, like in anything? Like, do you have anything on the calendar?
I play some gigs with my dad, who is a singer-songwriter, but Other than that, no, I think one issue I did make was I didn't tell a ton of people I was back mm-hmm. here because I didn't know how long I was going to be back.
Yeah.
And so I do have a couple things on the horizon with some other pop percussion stuff. I have, I'm part of a Tom Petty tribute band now. And then I'm also in a kind of like a high energy, big old like Tower of Power kind of setting, mm-hmm. Playing perk for that. That's a lot of fun. But it's all, you know, it's all feel, it's all grooves and stuff like that. Bless you. And they, that kind of stuff is motivating. It's, you know, getting my hands moving on the drums at least.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this strange feeling. I was telling somebody this the other day about like how I missed the grind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Having all that going on, those 14, 16 hour days that you had, mm-hmm. like there's something about that that felt, it almost became comfortable, which is, looking back, it wasn't the healthiest time of my life, but something about that grind of like working towards, you know, something. I thought about doing video projects, you know, mm-hmm. Finally pulling the trigger on a nice camera, and I have a decent camera, but nothing that is of the quality that I would like. And then, you know, buckling down and learning something again. But like I said, this cloudiness doesn't really allow me right now to formulate a good plan.
Uh-huh.
It's so negatively charged. It's always like, well, what the heck's the point? And then, you know, I look at somebody like you who actually find it's very motivating to look at yourself who learned a concerto and, you know, is learned all this lit and has stuff on the horizon. Like that's motivating to me because it's like, he's doing it, I can do it too. Like kind of thing. Like it's all about a mindset for me right now. It's all mental.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Like Jordan Spieth just won for the first time in 4 years, a PGA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was nothing to do with anything but just mentality. Cause golf is such a mental game. And I feel like drumming is such a mental, once you develop the physical attributes, like it's such a mental game, I feel like. So, or at least his career is in general.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's definitely a mental game because nothing is, it's just, I mean, if you went into a regular career field, the path is kind of charted for you. And then if you want to go off the path and try to make more money or get more prestige or start your own thing, that's great. But, you know, you just have a ladder that you're climbing the whole time. So it's like for us, yeah, it's mentally, it's just so challenging to chart your own path. I mean, and that's kind of what I was thinking about when you were talking is, yeah, having a deadline is going to help you a lot. I mean, and I'm struggling through it. Like the concerto thing, it was great that it happened, great the premiere happened, but I waited till the last minute. I didn't enjoy the process of like actually learning the notes because I was just like shitting my pants trying to figure this out. and then you get to the end and it's like, yeah, it was really great. And I was like, man, I masochistically held myself back in that situation. Just,
dude, what a word. Hold on. What a word.
Masochist.
That was awesome. Masochist.
Yeah, masochist, like,
yeah, got it.
You inflict pain on yourself, basically. And
yeah.
You know? And so it's like self-sadism in the non-sexual sense, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like you don't want yourself to be happy.
Yeah.
So you find ways to like hide the fact that you're fighting yourself. And for me, that was like, I'll just wait till the last minute. And I know I'll get it done because I know I learn music fast and all this, but I will literally wait until it is fight or flight in this moment. And and then I don't enjoy the process throughout. And you're just doing it to yourself. So for me, when I look at your situation, it's like part of me wants to say just set a deadline for literally anything, but something that you have to be responsible to somebody else for.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, don't screw that up. You know, because you're then you're responsible to someone else for it. But part of me also wants to say, like, take a week and, like, rebuild and plan, like, what you want that deadline to be. But at the same time, speed would be really nice to just set the deadline right now, no matter what it is, and give yourself 15 days to do something or, you know. So I think there's different ways you can approach it depending on your own personality. But I think, like, Theo Von was talking to Jordan Peterson about a lot of different things on a recent podcast, and just the idea that you're intentionally holding yourself back. You're wanting yourself to be unhappy because you're afraid of being happy, because once you get happy, you have to deal with a lot more shit mentally in and of your, like, then you can't mentally complain to yourself about your situation or worry, like,
yeah,
you're happy. So then you unlock things and you're like, now I have to deal, like, for me, it's like, now I have to deal with my hesitance about religion and death, but I don't want to deal with that shit, so I'm gonna just hold myself back.
And be miserable
by intentionally letting myself be, or like money. I'm terrible with money. I'm really bad with it. And like I've had really, really good months playing, and I've had really terrible months. And I always find a way to just suck with money, because if I have enough money, I get more freedom. And the more freedom you get, the more choices you have to make for yourself, as opposed to making them for money.
I'm bad with it in a sense of, like, I'm afraid to let it go.
Uh-huh.
Like, if that makes sense. Like, I'm a little too frugal at times.
Well, that's kind of good, though.
I mean, yeah, but, like, at the...
But you got to treat yourself. Holding yourself...
Well, there's a whole... But, but I do like the... I like kicks, all right? I just got these the other day.
All right.
Classics. But that's, like... once every like 6 months. I find myself to be, we're talking about the holding yourself back thing, like I honestly feel like I have the capital to purchase this equipment that I would need, and I just won't do it because, like, I'm afraid of being the broke musician I always have been. And
are you afraid of the commitment that the equipment brings?
Yeah,
because like you buy the camera, you're like, I better use this damn camera.
Exactly.
That's how I am. Yes. But I just pull the trigger anyways because I'm shitty with money. And then being broke, not only is it like, I better use this.
I'm bad anyway.
It's like, I better use this, but maybe I won't even use it. And I'll just buy it. That way I'm unhappy still and I'm broke.
Dude, or I'll use it. And then it's like for something totally out of left field.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you know what? I could get fitted for golf clubs this week. And then I'll do it. And then I'm like, after I get fitted, I'm like, I can't even buy this right now. You know what I mean? And, but that's also a little bit deeper. I think that's me searching for some kind of something to be kind of searching for something else to work on that I don't feel like I'm a failure at. Right. That's really deep. Mm-hmm. But while I don't feel like I'm a failure, I definitely feel like, there's a strange sense of like, I'm running out of time. Where, like, I'm only 25. Like, what are you talking about?
It is
about?
A strange thing.
Moron.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But, yeah. I, like, you feel like, well, maybe I should get a doctorate because it'll add more to my resume. It's like, no, you don't need to do that. Like, you just need to, this is where the real work begins, not school. Like,
yeah,
you can't just go running back to school because you feel like you're not getting enough done outside of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, man. Which, that's another discussion.
Yeah. But, and you said something a second ago, and I had something in my brain about it, and I lost it. You're talking about the getting fitted for golf clubs, not buying them.
Dang. But then, you know, it's like I was like searching, maybe.
Yeah. Dang, I lost it. Well, at any rate, yeah, this stuff becomes more apparent too. Well, I think it becomes more apparent for self-employed, creative people. Yeah, and you have to, like, chart your own path, you know? It's interesting because, like, when I was in school, too, I felt like I knew exactly what I wanted to be. And it became very easy to map everything back to that. And then the moment you start second-guessing it is when just, like, the shit hits the fan. Because you don't have, like, a North Star, you don't have like a guiding light to like your actions.
And you can look to people who have done it, but the path is, it's still not charted. Like the person I looked up to the most was Alex Stopa, and because he was doing it, like he was playing full time but teaching lessons and had his own studio, his whole like this whole setup, right? His life, he had a nice house, like he was doing it, and yet he was pretty much the only person I knew that was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the path is so hard to forge, you know.
Yeah. But I would rather, you know, there are some people, for whatever reason, that can get all those things, you know, that can have what looks like a picture-perfect career, a nice house, good money in the bank, you know, like, and they've handled their stuff, seemingly, but, and there are a lot of those people that are really unhappy. Like, I would rather, they're really unhappy, and then they never figure that out. But I would almost rather go through the struggles right now that, like, I'm going through, that you and I are talking about, in the hopes that in, like, 3 to 30 years, I will reach that point, but then be like, you know what? By the time you get there, you're wise enough that you don't screw up anymore. Like, you don't,
yeah.
You're always going to fight these battles, but you're going to get there knowing, like, the struggles you went through, and knowing that you really were intentional about the way that you got there, even if it took longer.
Yeah, there's some intangibles that come with that journey.
Yeah.
Some valuable ones.
Yeah.
So.
But the concept of freedom with money, you know, yeah, and just holding yourself back, that's been on my mind a lot, which is why it's like I'm going to start taking concrete steps. If I don't set the concrete steps for me are the same things as performance deadlines. They're performance deadlines for my life.
Yeah.
As opposed to my career, so... Yeah, and I've realized, like, I'm not going to go on the road and kill myself anymore. You know, when gigs start coming back, I'm not going to go show to show. Like, I'll give myself days off in between, and I'll ask for more money because I have to pay for those days off to some degree. And
yeah,
I need to be more, like, happiness is ultimately what is better for you than anything else, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, the golf stuff makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, searching for happiness within something that isn't my calling is not exactly what it's supposed to be about. Like, I understand what I'm supposed to be doing, I think, maybe. I'm not going to be a pro golfer. Like, let's be real here. But it's definitely a nice hobby, and it makes me happy. But drumming and music making and creating all this podcast, everything makes me happy. It's just not as radiant right now. Like, I honestly, that's, but it's there. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I enjoy doing it still. Like, picking up sticks and playing on a pad is still enjoyable for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a sense of, like, there was a sense of this in the middle of the pandemic where it was like, well, what's the point?
Mm.
Right? Like, nobody even knew if this was going to come back, even in this amount of time. Yeah. Right? Because we were all here in 2 to 3 years or whatever. And I think I just needed to finally take the steps to get back to where I was. Right? Mm-hmm. And instead of always, like, imagining myself back where I was and just finally taking concrete steps like you're talking about. And I bet there's somebody listening to this right now who is going through the exact same mental hurdles, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all a mental game for me right now. It's not like we ever lose ability to play unless something happens to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll definitely feel rusty or whatever, but it's just a mental battle.
Yeah,
it's very strange.
I think, I mean, you're talking about kind of getting back to what you used to do. I think, like, that's the same exact struggle. I was thinking about this on my walk today, which is that I put off through the pandemic contacting presenters or orchestras or university professors where I would normally do my kind of my email thing and send things to people and try to get gigs booked. I put that off, and I think rightly so. I think if I would have been blasting those out, people would have been like, listen, asshole, you know, like, the world shut down.
Yeah.
But now I have to get back to doing that because the word on the street from talking to people is like, hey, this shit's coming back. You got to get out there now. It's the time.
Yeah.
And now there's, like, some ugly skeletons in my closet with all that stuff where it's like, a lot of the music I was playing before the pandemic, I didn't like. I just kind of got stuck in a rut and it's like, when I come back out now, I now have to, like, start selling myself, selling my recitals, redoing my press kit, my materials very quickly to start getting them back out there. So like, for instance, like the concerto was already booked, you know, it was mm-hmm. already on the books 2 years ago. So I've actually done no work to get gigs moving forward. Zero. Like the PASIC's been on the calendar already. I have another concerto in the fall that's already been on the calendar. So I'm at that same point where I'm actually kind of pushing it off myself too a little bit, unfortunately, and because I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm scared about failing, because it's like everybody was failing because nobody had work, and now it's like I'm going to get back into the mix, and I'm scared of falling on my face again, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this is all like, nobody outside of this understands that this is all within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
This every day, this banter, this like straight up just constant conflict. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was the most confident when I felt like I had a routine of getting better every day. Mm-hmm. That morning, like we talked about morning practice, swiping that key card to get in the building at like 6:37 a.m. in grad school and getting all my work done in that morning slot was it was almost empowering. It was like fuel.
Yeah.
It was like I was like a machine. And then that gets taken away from me. Of course, I should have expected it was going to get taken away from me anyway. I was about to graduate. Mm-hmm. But because look, in reality, everybody knows this, a master's program and what we do is you have to start planning for the next step after your first semester.
Yeah.
Really. Which is unreal. But
yes, it is.
Your degree is only, it's not even 2 years technically. It's only like probably 19 months, 18 months, maybe mm-hmm. year and a half. And so with that, I was going to at least ride off that wave. You know what I mean? And I think getting back to that's very tough because it's not the same structure mm-hmm. of having all this going on, like I mentioned before. But I feel like I'm close. I'm close to a reset, mm-hmm. which I'm excited about. And I think if I set my own deadlines when it comes to maybe a video project, talking to Gene Kaczynski, that dude's a machine.
Yeah.
Both him and Tim.
Yeah.
You want to talk about some of the hardest working dudes in the entire game? It's them, because they got professorships and they got a studio to worry about and they got their duo and they got their solo projects. Like that is very, very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I feel like I'm close. I don't know if anybody else feels that way, but whether I took this time to reset my mind and relax and chill after 7 years of school, the right way or the wrong way, I at least feel like I'm coming back. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, man. It's a time of change right now. I'm telling you,
discipline.
Yeah.
Which is
God,
man. I think it'll click one day. It's kind of like one of those things of where something kind of clicks, like you're learning a piece and you're like, oh, wait, I know it. Like one of those things. I think it'll click.
I need a very steady balance thinking about what you're talking about, kind of getting back into the grind, the flow. I need a steady balance of, how do I put it? Like, for instance, this week for me, I do have things I should do. I need to do product demos for Black Swamp and Malatech that I've been putting off for a while because I'm a little bit like mm-hmm. I'm getting in my own head about them, and so I'm scared of them, and so because of that then I don't want to do them and I don't want to commit, but I'm gonna do them. That's like my number one goal for this week, along with getting my exercise shit and my mental walks back, like, you know, set up. Where was I going with this? Dang, dude, it's I'm oh no, that sucks.
I do get in my own head about that, by the way, too.
Oh,
Kyle Peters, go ahead, don't lose it.
No, it's this idea of like, this week I pushed everything aside and I said, I have
this is what I'm doing.
I have this time. Yeah. But at some point, I have so much time this week because I haven't really set, because I don't have a million deadlines. I do have a lot of deadlines, but some of them I said I'm intentionally not worrying about them this week.
Right.
So I needed this week to focus and dial myself in. And on day two of five so far, I'm dialed in and I'm feeling really good about it.
There you go.
But to I do need those times where shit is so crazy, where you have so much pressure and so many deadlines. I need those times too, where I can prove to myself that I can maintain my workout schedule, maintain my mental health schedule, and then also do a million of these things, and the pressure of those situations making me work harder. Cause like, I'm gonna get to the end of this week and be a little bit lazy because I had too much time this week. So there's like a balance of like, for me, I always feel like I need to take a lot of breaks. I have a lot of reset moments in my life, whether it's one day or one month, where I need mental reset. And then also I need those times where I have 1,000 deadlines, because that's the only thing that'll get me up and going is to feel scared of the deadline. So like, how do you balance that? Like,
fear of failure.
Yeah. How do you swing from, they're extremes though. It's like, I don't know if I have to have the extremes or if I have to find a middle path, scheduled middle path. I'm not sure yet.
I've never found it. Me neither. I've always had extremes.
It's like manic. It's so crazy, man.
It's one friend of mine one time sat me down in Vegas, and she was like, you know, like you like create problems for yourself in your mind. Mm-hmm. Like I was like tripping about this vibraphone piece I had to learn, and I was like 3 months out from having to play it. I'm like, I don't know this by now. I should know this by now. And like, she's like, what are you talking about? You psychopath. And that's the extremes I'm talking about, right? Where you're like creating chaos for no reason. And I was that was a really big wake up call. Cause I was like, you end up learning the piece too fast. That point. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I learned it too fast. And then I wasn't trusting my own abilities and my own work ethic, but for no reason. Mm-hmm. Right. I had no reason to believe I wasn't going to get it done. It's almost like I didn't trust myself. Mm-hmm. I was creating chaos, which is strange.
Again, you just don't want to let yourself be happy, man. I think that really comes down to that. It's like, because the minute that you learn that and this is just me speaking, putting words in your mouth, but for me it's like, if I learn that vibraphone piece 2 months in advance, then I have to deal with the fact that then I have to go, instead of getting up on stage and my goal being like play the piece and don't screw up and play the notes, the goal then becomes like artistry, intention, like all those things where the vulnerable parts of it, it's vulnerable to get up there and put yourself, but you know that you have the gig, you know that you have to play a piece for the gig. So that's not that vulnerable anymore because you have to do it. But then the vulnerable part is like, the excuse in your mind after you play it, is it going to be like, oh man, you know, I was really crunched for time for learning this piece. So like, I didn't quite get all the notes. Or is it going to be like, my artistry sucked? You know, the different things you deal with. So I think for me, it's like, it's almost safer to just be like, well, I didn't quite have enough time, so the piece just didn't come out, and not even think about the musicianship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're just like up there trying to build something as you're performing it, which something should have already been built.
You're just finding the best, like for me, it's like finding the best excuse for myself after the fact, because it's never going to be good enough, whether or not it's a notes issue or a musicality issue. So
nobody's had the perfect performance ever.
So if it's never going to be good enough, it's like, what excuse am I going to allow myself to make based on my preparation?
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, yeah, I'd rather just have a shitload of notes to learn and get up there and just get through the performance. And then my excuse is, well, I was just crammed. I was crammed for time.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It's silly. It's so silly what we do to ourselves.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Created artificial chaos. Like it's...
Yeah.
It's the only way I can really put a name to it.
God, so. Life is so about excuses, man. For yourself or for others or whatever. And
So any- I'm with you too, though, on this project. I have to do one for Innovative. And I'm like, oh, I don't have the right gear, all this kind of stuff. And I'm just making excuses, mm-hmm. like we're talking about. Then I talked to Kyle Peters a month or so ago on the podcast, and he's like, oh, I just do all my, I do all my instructional videos on my iPhone. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, dude, what iPhone do you have? I was like, 12. And he's like, dude, you can shoot in 1080 and 30 frames or 60 frames or whatever. You have so many options.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, okay. And then, like, you talk to somebody like that who I don't know him as well as you do, mm-hmm. but it seems like he's got every, you know, he's doesn't, he's controlled. Like, he gets his stuff done mm-hmm. without too many excuses. So you talk to somebody like that and your whole mindset kind of shifts and you're like, maybe I'm creating these problems for myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. My new one has been like, like, you know, in school you have to reset. You have to reset rooms. You have to do 45 minutes of setup for your multi-solo and everything. And now it's like all my shit is literally in my basement. And my thing now is like, I don't want to have to reset my basement. Like, dude, it is so relative. Problems are so relative. Like, when you hear rich people complain about something, you just want to put your middle finger in their face. But problems are just so relative, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyways... We should wrap this up, though. I'm getting texted from my fiance. So, anyways.
Yeah. Well, I thought this was really good.
Yeah, me too, man.
Yeah, that was awesome. I hope you've been enjoying the first two episodes of the Offstage series. I know I am. So, today we talked about artificial chaos and discipline and a bunch of different stuff, and you know what, I think at the end of the day, I think all of us in our community are dealing with some form or fashion of this, and some are dealing with it better than others. So you can follow the Rune Wheel podcast on all major platforms, subscribe, rate, review. You heard the ad about the support link in the description below, and you can follow all of Cameron's stuff on his socials, Sealeach Music, me, Hartwell Drums, HartwellDrums.com, SealeachMusic.com, all the good stuff. You know where to find us. And yeah, man, any closing words?
Nothing. Great. Let's do it again.
Yeah, man. We're doing it again. All right. That's it for this one. We'll see you next time.